Hey, good afternoon, Juneau. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. It's just exactly 3 o'clock, and we are on the air with Juneau Afternoon. Pat Moore, your host today, and I've got a bunch of wonderful guests. I have three people who went down to Ecuador and climbed mountains, and a guy who took them down there coming up. This will be the preview of tonight's evening at Egan presentation up at UAS. M.K. McNaughton's going to drop by. She's got new work on display at COPA. We'll have a preview of Juneau Lyric Opera's production La Traviata. Mark Kratz and Kathleen Wayne will be dropping in. And we'll find out about the Women's Climbing Workshop coming up at the Rock Dump. Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, the usual features, music, a little bit more than that, and I'll be your host all the time through that. Looking forward to it myself, and I hope you'll stay with me. The forecast, well, rain doesn't get out of the forecast until after Wednesday at least. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. New information has been released about the long-questioned murder convictions of a group of men known as the Fairbanks Four. As Dan Bross reports, hundreds of Native people gathered to celebrate the news this week in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Supporters of the Fairbanks Four believe the men are wrongly imprisoned for the 1997 stabbing death of local teen John Hartman. They assembled in front of the state courthouse where requests for post-conviction relief were submitted. The applications include evidence that implicates a group of former locals. Alaska Innocence Project Director Bill Oberle points to a letter from an inmate serving life for a subsequent murder that tells a story of he and high school friends carrying out random violence.
And they came downtown and harassed people, and John Hartman was an unfortunate victim of that.
Oberle told the crowd the new information is vindication for the Fairbanks Four: George Fries, Kevin Pease, Marvin Roberts, and Eugene Vent.
Proves that Marvin, George, Eugene, and Kevin are innocent, and that we will prevail in that regard. So.
The Tanana Chiefs Conference has long worked to leverage new information to free the Fairbanks Four, three of whom are Alaska Native. TCC Justice Task Force Chair Shirley Lee welcomed the new evidence.
The filing made on behalf of the Fairbanks Four by the Alaska Innocence Project brings light to a case made dark by things done and left undone.
There's much resentment in the Native community about past handling of the case by law enforcement and courts, agencies that will determine what happens next. For National Native News, I'm Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Alaska.
This week, a federal judge in California sided with tribes and environmentalists to protect marine mammals along the Pacific coast. The groups are concerned about naval training. California News Service reporter Lori Abbott has more.
A federal judge has ruled the National Marine Fisheries Service failed to protect the marine mammals from the Navy's use of sonar in their training exercises along the California coast. Hawk Rosales is with the Intertribal Sinkione Wilderness Council that represents 10 tribes in the Mendocino area. He says the current permits allow the Navy to conduct training exercises that can harm marine mammals and disrupt their migration, breeding, or feeding.
Science tells us that they are being impacted, and studies show that there have been many casualties from marine mammals because of the sonar.
Steve Mashuda is an Earth Justice attorney representing the Coalition of Conservation and Northern California Indian Tribes.
What we've been advocating for the agency to do is to take this new information it has about the extent of the harm and where these whales are at certain times of the year, and to put in place some time and place restrictions on training exercises within certain areas.
The judge found the agency failed to use the best available science to assess the impacts of sonar to whales and other marine mammals. The federal agency must now reassess its permits to ensure the Navy's training activities comply with the Endangered Species Act. This is Lori Abbott, California News Service.
The National Marine Fisheries Service says it's reviewing the ruling. New Mexico Congressman Ben Ray Lujan offered an amendment Thursday to the Southeast Arizona Land Exchange and Conservation Act in order to protect sacred and cultural sites. The bill involves a land exchange for a copper mining project. Lujan says the sacred sites are not on reservations but are still on public land and protected under certain laws. Funeral services are scheduled today in California for Navajo code talker Nelson Draper Sr. According to the Navajo Nation, Draper passed away Sunday at his home in Barstow. He received the Congressional Silver Medal in 2001 for his service in World War II. Draper was 96 years old at the time of his death. On the fourth Friday in September, California celebrates Native American Day. In 1968, California Governor Ronald Reagan signed a resolution designating the fourth Friday in September as American Indian Day. Legislation was enacted in the 90s, creating the day as an official state holiday. There are more than 100 federally recognized tribes in the state. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hey, it's 6 minutes after 3 o'clock. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My first three guests and my fourth guest who brought them in here. I've got Karen Goldberg-Bell here, Chelsea Bomba, and Freddie Munoz, along with Kevin Krein. And these folks just got back fairly recently from Ecuador, where they've been down climbing mountains as part of their college education. An unusual part of a college education, to say the least. Kevin, what is this? What is it that causes a college senior to go climb a mountain?
Well, all three of these students are completing four-year degrees or have just completed four-year degrees in outdoor studies. And what we do is with that program, we have a couple different four-year tracks. And when the students are graduating, we put together a capstone-type experience, or they put together a capstone-type experience. And what we're really looking for is something that pushes them and allows the students to kind of work as a group and really utilize everything that they've learned over the last 4 years and hopefully also kind of broaden their horizons and introduce them to, in this case, the international kind of climbing and guiding scene. In particular, we went to Ecuador mainly because Karen here was interested. And Karen, do you want to say a little bit about that?
Yeah. So since my first capstone in 2011 with the program, one of the other teachers, Forrest Wagner, discussed that there could be a potential possibility in going international in climbing, and he said that any place really was an option, but Ecuador was one of the places he just kind of brought up, and it kind of stuck with me. So when the capstone came about, I pretty much planned really intensely, and I asked everyone if they wanted to go to Ecuador, and they thankfully said yes, and we all got to go to Ecuador. It was really exciting.
Yeah. Oh, your connection to Ecuador?
I had never been to South America before.
Oh, you just picked it up off the map?
It seemed cool. It seemed like not a great place for a redhead to go, so I thought I'd go there.
Well, also, Ecuador, the Andes, just goes north to south, straight in the middle of Ecuador, and there's just, in really close proximity to each other, these really tall peaks that you just get that high altitude mountaineering experiences really quickly. You could kind of think of it as like a training zone. It's a really good place to work on that acclimatization and see how your body functions and work on your skills. So, and we met a lot of people from around the world that were doing the same thing, and It was really nice.
And also these peaks I planned because it seemed like they could be summited potentially by everyone, and a lot of us had gone on capstones before and we have not summited our mountains that we had planned on doing. So hopefully I wanted to plan a capstone, you know, for us graduates or seniors who hadn't had the chance to summit a big mountain before to actually get up there and call it our senior trip.
Freddie, was this like your first capstone experience? Or?
No, this is actually my second capstone. My first capstone was, I think, 5 years ago, also with Kevin, and we climbed Denali. And so, yeah, this is the first international. And I've been to Peru as well and really loved it. And so when Ecuador came up, I really wanted to jump on that. And, yeah, it was a phenomenal trip. And another reason why we chose Ecuador, too, is this is a group of skiers. And so that played a big part. And I snowboard. Yeah, so that played a big part. We wanted to pick mountains that were possible for skiing down as well.
Well, and Pat, maybe I should clarify too. Every year we do some kind of trip, some kind of expedition within Alaska. And at this point, since our program has expanded, it looks like probably every other year we'll do an international trip like this. So all the students that went had been on at least one prior trip. within Alaska, so a prior expedition.
How big is the program now, Kim?
We have about 30 students, I think, across our programs. We have a Bachelor of Liberal Arts in Outdoor and Adventure Studies, and we have a Geography and Environmental Studies major with an emphasis in Outdoor Studies. And then we also have a one-year program that's really kind of set up for upper division students to come in, or oftentimes students who've just graduated from other programs.
Now, I'm sitting here thinking to myself, I know what an engineer is, where an engineer is going to apply for jobs when they're done, but I have no idea where you're going to be looking for jobs. What's the demand for people who take this study?
Well, one of my dream jobs is National Park Service, and I did the four-year geography and environmental studies program, and so I've worked with Fish and Game. I've worked with National Park
Service. As part of your degree work?
Yeah, while I was a student.
Okay.
And now, currently, I'm commercial fishing, and I'm also working down at the rock dump right now, and teaching people how to climb, and just trying to stay active.
So you're in demand with this degree, with this training?
Yeah, there's definitely jobs available, for sure, and all over Alaska, and... Yeah. So,
Karen, is that your experience too?
For me, I work with the Forest Service doing trail work out mainly in the developed recreation sites. But it's a lot of outdoor activity, which is fantastic for someone like me, and it's a lot of physical work, which I really enjoy doing. And I couldn't imagine doing anything else really right now after graduating college. It seems like
Chelsea,
really
you're coming along through the program. So was this your first capstone, or had you been to another one of these adventures?
No, this is my second capstone. I've completed the 1 year certificate, actually maybe 2 years ago or a year ago, and I'm just kind of working on finishing up my 4 year degree right now. And this is my senior
year. In which
year.
Of the majors?
Well. Kind of flip-flopping between the two. Geography and environmental studies, but I think I'm going to switch to the outdoor and adventure studies, just trying to make things work out time-wise. But,
Are you finding those same kinds of opportunities that we were talking about a second ago that Freddie was able to find?
Oh, definitely. In the past two summers, I worked for a local company, Above and Beyond Alaska, owned by Sean and Becky Janes, and I know they're really well known throughout the community. They're really good people, and the staff is amazing, and we do work with independent travelers a lot of our day trips are run by the tourists coming in from the cruise ships. But we're kind of like a rent-a-guide company, so we take a lot of locals out to do trips in local areas like Tracy Arm or Pack Creek. And so, yeah, I've really enjoyed working with that company. And there's this internship up in Talkeetna, Alaska, for Alaska Mountaineering School that I've been really looking into and I think I'm going to make happen. And basically, I'll be instructing, doing a lot of the same thing, kind of similar with the program, going out and teaching skills, hard and soft skills to students, and then doing guided trips on Denali.
I am sensing an incredible level of self-confidence here. I interview other college students, and these folks really seem to have something behind them. Is that the result of great physical conditioning, or is it the fact that you've all
weird.
Summited great big mountains, or what? Man, you guys sound like you got this thing in hand.
You have to have an ego to be a mountaineer a bit, so.
So that's it.
Or
okay.
A little weird.
Or a little weird.
A lot weird.
Okay, so I guess you're giving a talk or a presentation tonight. What's the nature of tonight's presentation? This is the... this is the evening at Egan, the regular Friday presentations that are up on campus in the lecture hall. This one starts at 7 o'clock tonight. So, Kevin, what's the agenda?
Well, it's a bit of a combination. So, Freddie here is also a filmmaker and put together a beautiful film edited from footage that he took on the trip. And then there's also a slideshow with photos that we all put together. One of our students, too, Yosuke Sano, who's... he's currently working as a photography guide, but he took some excellent pictures. So a lot of those photos will be in the slideshow, and then there will be some kind of reflecting on the experience in the program as well. But, yeah, I think a lot of the highlights will be the images, and I mean, Freddie's film is just beautiful.
So 7 o'clock tonight, great images. All of you are going to be there to talk about your adventure and to
and
let
with
people
a few
know
other
this one.
Well.
And a few other students. How many folks are all in the panel?
So there will be, actually, I guess one here, only one more.
Yeah,
during
one
the,
more.
There were 8 students total on the trip. But
okay.
A lot of them are off doing other things now and have kind of, you know, finished the program and are kind of moving on and things. So, yeah.
I guess I have one more question, and that is, is this kind of program common through universities around the country, or is this kind of like a Southeast Alaska thing?
Well, there are a lot of outdoor rec programs. I think what really makes our – there are two things that make our program, I think, special. One is that we're in a great spot and we do great trips. I mean, things like this are pretty hard to pull off, and it's great that the university has given us a lot of support. The other thing is that we have – the way our program is set up is that it's really a mix between a liberal arts education or taking a liberal arts approach to outdoor studies. So students in the program do philosophy of environment, philosophy of sport classes, literature in the environment. And so they end up having a lot of opportunities to reflect on what they're doing outside. And that's really kind of the idea, the theme behind the program. So, yeah, and this is really, and it's rare. I think we might be the only program anywhere. And I actually think if there are any other programs, I think ours is probably the best. I mean, we do a really good job.
Whoa.
Yeah,
there's that ego.
No, I think so. Hey, thank you so much for letting us know that we can see pictures and hear the stories tonight at 7 o'clock at Evening at Egan in the lecture hall up at the UAS campus. Free to the public, right?
Oh, yeah.
Hey,
yeah, absolutely free.
Great.
And Pat,
great
thanks a lot.
Hey, my pleasure. It's 18 minutes after 3 o'clock, almost 19 minutes after 3. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. We're in the middle of Juneau afternoon. Pat Moore, your host today, and a quick look at the weather. Well, you already saw it today. Numerous showers and then rain in the afternoon. Highs today around 51 and southeast winds about 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tonight, rain. Saturday, rain. Saturday night, mostly cloudy. Chance of rain. Sunday, mostly cloudy. Doesn't say rain. Yeah? This is good. Sunday night through Monday night, mostly cloudy, lows around, 41, highs around 53. And again, it didn't say anything about rain, folks. And then Tuesday and Wednesday, it says rain again. So little maybe a possibility here of a Sunday where we don't have
but
to wear the rain.
But we don't
have
to complain about after this summer.
Yeah, yeah. So this is the voice you just heard is Mark Wheeler, who's opening a new restaurant. And in a moment, you're going to hear the voice of M.K. McNaughton, whose paintings are hanging on the walls of the new restaurant. This place is called Copa.
Yeah, it's an ice cream and coffee shop on Glacier Avenue, right next to the Federal Building and Song Sushi in the new building renovated by Paul Volkers.
The renovation really came out beautiful.
It's really wonderful. It's nice. The old Sturm's cold storage building. That building was an old cold locker. People couldn't afford to have freezers back then. So Sturm would rent you a locker, and you'd bring your meat there and keep it frozen. And actually had a butcher shop in the back, too.
Yeah. So how big is the space that you're going to be in? How many seats?
We have about 22 seats.
Okay.
A little flexible. It's a really nice place. We have some hemlock tables made by Icy Straits Lumber. Ooh. We have a wonderful yellow cedar countertop and some beautiful art by MK now gracing the walls, and it's a nice place to come at, get out of the rain, have a cup of coffee, maybe have some homemade ice cream that we make from stuff right here in Juneau.
Oh, like, for instance, give me a flavor.
Our signature item is rhubarb sherbet. I've been making rhubarb sherbet for a few years now, and something people seem to really like. It has this, I think we all have these kind of nostalgic associations with rhubarb, you know, maybe our aunt's rhubarb pie or dipping it in sugar and eating a stalk. So it really brings out that full rhubarb flavor, and it's really bright, wonderful flavor. But we do stuff like I made a chocolate smoked sea salt with this alder smoked salt from Sitka. I have a Granny Smith apple sorbet with some apples from the flats, and Jay Cronwell brought me some blueberries from Eagle Crest yesterday, so I made some blueberry lavender ice cream. So we're just trying to mix it up and do fun stuff, and hopefully stuff people enjoy.
Any plans for music?
We're going to have Irene Mueller tonight. She's going to sing for us and sell some of her new CDs. She's got a new CD out, and show some MK's art and hopefully sell some art tonight.
Yeah. MK, are you sort of a standing exhibition, or are you there for an hour and a half and then taking it all down, or what's the name?
The show's up for through October.
Through October.
And Mark called me up when I was traveling a month and a half ago, and said, what about hanging some art? And I like to hang new art. So we talked and decided traveling theme was a good idea.
Oh, okay.
And the Copa, the idea of an Italian-infused ice cream and coffee shop, inspired me to paint some images from travels in Europe last summer. Mm-hmm. Europe, Juneau.
Iceland, too, right?
Iceland, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Part of Europe.
It's really lovely stuff.
Yeah.
We actually had to buy one of the paintings. Me and my wife couldn't resist, but it's some great art. She's got some great landscapes and some beautiful koi from where was that? Where was this koi?
It was
from?
Actually in Glasgow, Scotland. It was a really strange botanical garden with a beautiful koi pond, and I stood next to a little girl who realized, wondered where her goldfish went after they died. She was going through that moment of thinking about that. Uh-huh. So for me, that painting has extra nostalgia.
Is that what happens with it?
I do. There are little stories in my head that go with each painting, whether you know it or not.
So we hope to feature local artists every month at the place. Robert Craver is going to do a show for us in November, and Jim Fowler is going to be there in December. It's great to have artists from the neighborhood showing their works there. And it's been nice to see the community and the neighborhood support the coffee shop. We've been open since Monday, and seeing people kind of make it part of their daily routine, or especially folks from the flats area just coming in and having a place to meet and see somebody and have a conversation. It's been really great.
Mark, the building you're in is this newly renovated space that used to have, it's kind of built up around Sung's.
Right.
Well, what was Sung's before? It was the only thing there, except behind it, there was
a
restaurant.
CJ Enterprise, like a little restaurant supply, pull tabs shop. Yeah. But it's, we have the Federal Building right across the street, and then the Gold Belt Building, so we have lots of workers nearby, and we're getting a 50-cent discount to first responders. We have the Coast Guard and the fire department right there, so we really want to support those folks, and It's just been great to see folks come out. We hope people come out tonight. We're having a grand opening from 4:30 to 7:30. We're going to have some music again by Irene Mueller and show MK's art. And hope people come out, have a cup of coffee, taste some ice cream, and see their friends and neighbors.
Yeah. I really like the local touch to the thing. I think we have a kind of a tendency to ignore some of the local ingredients around here.
Yeah, so I've been making beer ice cream, which is really fun. We have this great beer right from Alaska Brewery.
Yeah.
So one of the flavors we have now is a pumpkin porter ginger snap, which has
a little shot of pumpkin porter, yeah.
Beer, okay. And Nancy Hemingway's ginger snap cookies. Nancy is doing our baking right now.
Oh, okay.
You may know her baking. She donates a lot to a lot of auctions around town. She's a wonderful baker, and he's been a home baker for many years, and just is kind of her debut is doing this commercially, and she's just doing a fabulous job. We're making some of the Fiddlehead cookies and some of her other creations, and we have some pain au chocolat tonight and some other tasty treats, a cardamom coffee cake and other things. So
what time's the grand opening start?
4:30 to 7:30.
Okay.
And we're at 917 Glacier. Again, it's on Glacier and 9th Street right across from the Federal Building.
MK, you going to be there?
I am. I'm having ice cream for dinner.
So can we
can
we then gather around and have you tell us the stories behind your painting?
I would love to. Please.
Well, you're willing
of
to
course.
Let these out.
Oh, okay, yeah, I talk okay. about everything.
So have you considered publishing them in book form with the stories attached
well,
to the other side?
Well, see if they're good first. Come listen to them.
Oh, I can't imagine that you telling a story couldn't be a good experience. It'd be
well,
wonderful.
That's the thing about traveling and capturing images and putting them down. They're always connected to some meaning, I think.
Folks, drop by COPA tonight, 4:30 to 7:30 for the grand opening. Take advantage of some of this wonderful locally produced food and take a look at MK's art. Sounds like a great evening opportunity.
Thanks for having us.
You bet. My pleasure.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 27th of September, 2013. It's the birthday of the Scottish writer Irvine Welsh, born in Leith, Edinburgh, in 1958, best known for his first novel, Trainspotting, published in 1993. Grew up in the housing projects among heroin addicts who were on welfare, moved to London, joined a punk band, played guitar, was arrested for petty crimes, and then enrolled in a computer skills program, went into real estate, got his MBA. And one day he came across an old diary of his from his druggy life in the projects in Edinburgh, a whole journal which became the basis for his book. It's the birthday of Joyce Johnson, born New York City, 1935, had a 2-year affair with Jack Kerouac, which he wrote a book about called Minor Characters, a young woman's coming of age in the beat orbit of Jack Kerouac. And it's the birthday of one of the most famous equations, E equals MC squared. 1905, on this day, Einstein came out with his paper, which asked, does an object's inertia depend on its energy content? And he used that equation to show that matter and energy are deeply connected. It had been an amazing year for Einstein, 1905. He completed his doctoral thesis. In March, he submitted a paper that proved that light could behave as a particle as well as a wave, which gave rise to quantum theory. And in June, he came out with a paper which dealt with the way the speed of light affects the measurement of time and space. The equation led to the discovery that a small amount of mass can be converted into a large amount of energy, which eventually led to the development of nuclear energy and the atomic bomb. The destruction of Hiroshima and Nagasaki was fueled by converting less than an ounce of matter into energy. Here's a poem for today by Mary Oliver, entitled August. Our neighbor, tall and blonde and vigorous, the mother of many children, is sick. We did not know she was sick, but she has come to the fence, walking like a woman who is balancing a sword inside of her body. And besides that, her long hair is gone. It is short and suddenly gray. I don't recognize her. It even occurs to me that it might be her mother, but it's her own laughter-edged voice. We have heard it for years over the hedges. All summer, the children, grown now, and some of them with children of their own, come to visit. They swim, they go for long walks at the harbor, they make dinner for 12, for 15, for 20. In the early morning, two daughters come to the garden and slowly go through the precise and silent gestures of Tai Chi. They all smile. Their father smiles, too, and builds castles on the shore with the children, and drives back to the city, and drives back to the country. A carpenter is hired, a roof repaired, a porch rebuilt, everything that can be fixed. June, July, August, every day, we hear their laughter. I think of the painting by Van Gogh, The Man in the Chair. Everything wrong and nowhere to go, his hands over his eyes. A poem by Mary Oliver, August, from her New and Selected Poems, Volume 2, published by Beacon Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by LendingTree, where you can fill out one form and receive up to 5 loan offers at trylendingtree.com, NMLS 1136. Produced by Joy Biles with assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You get it all here on Juno Afternoon, even the, Friday afternoon at the opera, right?
Okay.
So my guests are going to be doing this thing from the stage right here in beautiful downtown Juneau, Alaska. And so with me are Mark Wheeler, the tenor, who is singing Alfredo. And
Mark Kratz.
Mark Kratz, sorry.
That's okay.
And Kathleen Wayne, who is singing Violetta.
Correct.
So this is not your children's bedtime story.
No. This is more like Dr. Phil or Oprah stories. Yeah, there's lots of twists and turns that you know you don't want kids to.
And it doesn't end well for Violetta.
No, doesn't end well. Like so many soprano roles, there is that death scene, that ultimate death scene.
But what a chance for an aria, right?
Always takes you up to a high A or C. Mm-hmm. Takes about 15 minutes.
Yes, for the death process.
Ultimately,
Mark, how's the Alfredo part? Does it have those features as well?
The tenor, a lot of times in opera, the tenor is kind of that that wimpy kind of lover boy, doesn't really fight very hard, but sings lots of pretty high notes.
The girl always goes to the baritone.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. But in this role, Alfredo is kind of a middle class citizen. He's not part of the highest part of French society, and of course, I go to all these parties with these lovely courtesans, which Violetta is by profession, and she...
Naughty girl, Violetta.
Yes, quite a bit, and she has been a favorite of the Baron, played by David Miller, and he has considerably more money than I do, and... But I definitely have the obsessed kind of tenor in this... I've been obsessed with Violetta through a lot of her recent illness, and I kind of always keep my eye on the prize. So it's kind of a love, kind of infatuation, I would call this tenor being. And if you come see the opera in Act Two, you'll see after we get some miscommunication, I pretty violently show her how I feel about her choices of men.
That sounds delightful.
But they reunite in the end.
Yes.
And all is forgiven, again, in that death scene.
Just in time for her to die and leave me alone.
Opera has a tendency among a lot of people to intimidate. It's always in Italian. No one can understand what's going on up on the stage. And we are intimidated by how we should watch this. So what's your advice?
Well, there are super titles. There will be English super titles projected above the stage. So, and they're short, nice and short, so you can get the whole full scene with, you know, a few words listed up there.
Very literal, too. I mean, I was able to watch from the house some of the translation, and it's very, very close to being a direct translation of what's actually being said in Italian. So you really will be seeing actually what we are saying, which sometimes translations, even at larger opera houses that I've sung with, they can be somewhat of a transliteration, and it's not quite on. But these are pretty accurate. So you'll be getting the pretty real deal through these.
Okay.
And it's not a real complex story. I mean, Alfredo is in love with Violetta. They meet. He confesses his love for her. Mm-hmm. They live together. Alfredo's dad comes and asks Violetta to give him up because he has a daughter who is ready to get married, but they don't like this relationship with Violetta.
The former courtesan, sure.
And so she's asked to leave, and then they see Violetta and Alfredo see each other at another ball. Violetta's with the Baron.
Yeah, I'm through the finding of there's a large chunk of the beginning of Act Two where there's a lot of letters that are exchanged between different characters, and I kind of get a miscommunication that I believe that Violetta mm-hmm. has left me to go back to Paris to be with the Baron. And I found a party invitation, so I decide that I'm going to follow her mm-hmm. to this party and get my revenge on not her mostly, but the Baron. And I think, unfortunately, Violetta, as a tragic opera soprano, she gets most of the brunt for everyone else's mistakes in this opera.
But the beautiful thing about Verdi is that he's painted each scene. In each scene, I think, is an opera in itself. He has just the acting and the story, the music really tells so much about what's going on. So all you have to do is sit and listen, and you could tell a lot about the story with just those two things, relaxing and listening.
If you were to look at a score of Verdi operas, Verdi operas are full of lots of instructions to the singer, lots of markings, lots of very specific details as to what he wants the singer to do, because he was one of the greatest opera composers in really just through his music. He was able to portray the emotions that he wanted by the certain, you know, technical things and the certain stylistic things that he instructs the singers to do. And he's one of the best, in my opinion, operatic mm-hmm. composers because of his detailing mm-hmm. of what he wanted in order to bring out the emotion.
Mm-hmm. Mark, can you contrast that, for instance, with Mozart, who had a tendency to not write parts of the score because he knew what it was going to do,
exactly.
and so he just wrote a couple of notes and said, and then play on or something.
Sure, and a lot of you know, a lot of the, in scores of Mozart operas, a lot of the dynamics and things that you see are not actually from Mozart, but are actually from editors and things of that nature. Mozart was leading into, you know, he was the predecessor to bel canto singing, which was, you know, in translation, you know, the beautiful singing. So where the singing style led to the emotion, the way in which you were taught to, the way you were taught to sing it. Would be a standard, there was a standard technique that you would use, and those emotions would come out through that standard technique. Mm-hmm. But as you go through the classical period and then you go into the Verdi time, all of a sudden composers of opera, they were much more, I don't want to say that Mozart was not involved in the drama, mm-hmm. But The drama in Romantic era opera definitely comes from a lot more instruction, definitely much more than just beautiful singing or making beautiful legato singing lines that the composers of later operas definitely wanted you to incorporate more techniques of their choice to bring out the drama rather than the beauty of the singing portraying it all, if that
makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, the soprano as the tragic heroine is all through opera. I
mean, oh, yeah. We always have a common theme.
Yeah. So.
As my kids always say, well, how do you die this time, Mama?
Right.
Are you dying of consumption, or who's going to kill you? Who's going to kiss you? Yeah, it's the same old story, which, you know, is not changed. It's the same story in movies. It's the same story in popular culture right now. It's, you know, romance that's gone wrong and, you know, a variety of individuals trying to figure out their lives. So, but we get to do it in through drama and song.
And we get to watch it.
Yes.
And the opportunities are Saturday, September 28th at 7:30 in the evening, and Sunday, September 29th at 3 p.m. This is at the JDHS Auditorium. How's the auditorium for opera? How's the
Ask Mark. I don't know much difference. That's where I performed a lot.
In comparison to other, I was here about 7 years ago, and I had done a production of Beauty and the Beast with Juno Lyric Opera in the auditorium, and it seems to me that they've actually made improvements.
They're flying those clouds.
Yeah, they have. There are clouds in the back to deflect the sound out. Right now, in an empty house, I feel glorious. Now, when we get it full of people, since it will be packed to the gill, you know, there'll be a difference. But it's a large stage. It's a very long stage. There's lots of playing ground. I'm very happy with it in comparison to other opera companies that I've worked with recently. It's a nice theater.
Outstanding. Okay, so the thing, again, is 7:30 on Saturday, September 28th. And Sunday, it's at 3 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
This is at JDHS Auditorium. Tickets are still on sale, JunoOpera.org and JAHC.org, the Juno Arts and Culture Center, Hearthside Books, Rainy Retreat, or At the Door.
Yep, exactly.
Great.
Wow.
Yeah. See you at the opera.
Here it is, right here. Let's listen to a little more of it.
Audiences are howling at the Tony Award-winning comedy God of Carnage by Yasmina Reza. Now playing at Perseverance Theater, the fun of watching Reza's play is watching four skilled actors battle it out, says the San Francisco Examiner. God of Carnage features some of Juno's best, Brandon Demery, Allison Holtkamp, and James Sullivan, along with guest artist Anya Wyndham. Come see the Tony Award-winning Broadway hit that part classical harmony, part wilderness howl, running now through October 6th. More information can be found online at PerseveranceTheater.org or by calling 463-TIXX.
Support for this program comes from Balloons by Night Moods, offering new and used Halloween costumes from infant to adult sizes. Balloons by Night Moods, located at 9342 Glacier Highway in the Valley. More info at 523-1099.
This is Bird Note. Writer Kurt Holting spent a year not driving his car or riding in a jet to reduce his use of fossil fuels. And during his adventure in local living, he made important discoveries.
I noticed maybe 6 weeks into the year that I could really begin to feel the pace of my own body slowing down. That inner residue of hurry and restlessness was gradually seeping out of my nervous system. I became more aware than ever of how the soundscape, how the aliveness of the immediate surrounding territory really holds us and deepens our experience of being human when we're willing to just slow down and listen in this kind of way. One of my favorite writers from Southeast Alaska, from Sitka, is Richard Nelson. I love what he says in The Island Within. He says, what makes a place special is the way it buries itself inside the heart. Not whether it's flat or rugged, rich or austere, wet or arid, gentle or harsh. Every place, like every person, is elevated by the love and respect shown toward it, and by the way in which its bounty is received.
The soundscape featured in today's show was recorded by Gordon Hempton and provided courtesy of QuietPlanet.com. For more about Kurt Holting's year, begin at birdnote.org.
Do you like listening to a mix of music on Saturday mornings? If you do, come and join me as I explore American music A to Z. Americana, singer-songwriter, country, contemporary classics. It's a musical stew on Saturday Sunrise with Rob or Shelley from 8 to 10 a.m. on KRNN Chino.
It's about 13 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Jess Brown is here from the Rock Dump, ready to tell us about a women's climbing workshop, but other things that are going on at the Rock Dump as well. Hi, Jess.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
Yeah. So what's up?
So I just wanted to get the word out that our women's rock climbing class has started back up. So I've been offering this class to women of all ages and abilities for about 4 years now, and we just started back up a couple weeks ago, and so we run from the fall through the winter and through the spring.
At the beginning of the show, I had three young persons who were part of the outdoor training program up at the University of Alaska mm-hmm. Southeast, who had just come back from Ecuador and doing some climbing. And one of the things that I remarked on during that interview was the incredible impression I had that they had an immense amount of self-confidence. I think that at least partially comes from the fact that they've summited some pretty big mountains and kind of they're comfortable with the fact that they can accomplish something. Is that kind of like the aim of this?
I think it is. So I came to Juneau originally and I worked with women and at the Aware Shelter, and after I worked there, I really wanted to find a place where I could work with women and build up their self-esteem and get them having fun. And so I'm a climber. I love climbing, and I've been doing it for 10 years, and I realized that the gym at the time wasn't very friendly to women. There were a lot of really buff guys coming in and muscling up things, and I know for someone who's never climbed before, or maybe some women who just aren't comfortable in that environment, that would be really intimidating. And so I created this class to just invite women of all ages and abilities to come in and just give it a try and experience their own bodies and just try different things. And in the process, you know, we learn a lot of things about our bodies and about our minds and what we're willing to try. And the women definitely experience a boost in self-esteem as they struggle through these problems and then conquer them and work towards new challenges. It's really pretty incredible to watch the transformation.
Okay, let's get this thing down off the high plane we're at now? Because I want to know about climbing the wall. What? Give me the lecture you give the people when they've got the harness on and they're about to do it for the first time.
Oh, absolutely. So we have women coming in on Wednesday nights for the first time ever. They've never climbed before. We also have women coming in who have maybe tried it before. So all different levels. And so when someone does come in, I explain to them how climbing really does rely on our mental muscle pretty strongly. And if you're not comfortable with the gear that you're using, you're not going to be comfortable climbing. And so I really take the time to go over the gear and how we keep everyone safe. So first of all, we'll go up to the wall and we'll look at the pieces of gear that we have, the rope, of course, and we'll look at the knot, and I'll make sure that I teach them how to tie the knot. I taught kids how to climb for about 4 years over at Zach Gordon, and so I have some really great analogies to teach about the knot. And so we use a double figure eight, which is a really safe knot. It tightens. The more you use it, the more you fall, the more you put weight on the rope, it tightens and gets safer. And we also use some auto-locking devices for belaying. So we use a gree-gree device, and that's a belaying device that as long as your belayer is taking out the slack as you climb.
Let's define belay.
Belay, yeah. That's a great question. So belaying is just when you're climbing, someone's basically taking in the rope, protecting you. So if you were to fall, you're a whole lot safer than if you were just free climbing and you didn't have a rope.
So if you start falling, does this person have to, like, grab the rope real fast, or
is that what this tool does? That's the great thing about this gree-gree. It's an auto-locking device where as long as the belayer is taking out the slack as the climber is going up, the device just catches the weight if there's any sudden impact on the rope. Mm. So if someone sits back and they're done with a climb, or if they fall, the device locks up and they won't really go too far.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's not a whole lot of strength involved in belaying necessarily.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now we've got one foot on the wall and one hand on one of those little chocks or whatever they are that you're grabbing onto, and we're starting up.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you saying?
So then we talk about the commands to keep everyone safe and in tune with what they're doing. And so, of course, communicating is really more important in climbing. And so we talk about the climber will communicate with their belayer and ask them, am I on belay? And the belayer will say, yes, belay on. And then if the climber is ready to go, they'll say climbing, and the belayer will say climb on. And that's how you know you're safe and that your belayer is paying attention and they're ready for you to fall potentially. So we go over a lot of those bits and pieces, and I just really try and make sure everyone's feeling as comfortable and safe as they can so that they can let go of that worrisome and fearful piece in their brain and just experience it for what it is.
Okay, so all my life I've been terrified of heights.
Yeah.
I have dreams of falling off of roofs and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I try to do any kind of work on a roof, I have to crawl around like a child because I otherwise I'll freeze. And I know this about myself. I know that, mm-hmm. that I can get the terrors up there. And then basically I can't even get on a ladder to get back down without mm-hmm. somebody to help me do it. And it's just, it's uncontrollable. It's not something, I can't talk myself out of this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I've tried, you know, because I have some stuff I really want to do on my roof and I can't do it. I have to have my son do this stuff for me. So where am I in this climbing experience? Should I give it a try?
Well, if you were a woman, I would say yes.
That's unlikely to happen.
Yeah, you know, I invite anyone to come down. The first year I started this class, I had a woman who was in her late 50s who had just had a radical hysterectomy and was really concerned about what she could and couldn't do. And so we talked on the phone, and I just invited her to come down, and she loved it. She's hooked. She still comes. And so really I just, you know, I have actually had some back issues growing up. I was born with scoliosis, and I have rods in my back, and I know that this is one of the most gentlest sports that I can do throughout my life, and it's really pretty incredible. We get a lot of women in their 50s, and one of the women is 60 now, and we even have women in their 20s, 30s, 40s. We get women to bring their daughters, so it's really accessible to anyone of any ability, of any fitness level. You can just start where you're at. If you're afraid of heights, then I'll take some more time to go over exactly what we're doing and how it's safe. And we'll take baby steps, of course. So, my goal of the class is to meet everyone where they're at. So we might have a certain theme or a certain topic or exercise to focus on for the class, but we really do, I let the students guide the class.
How does someone get into the class?
Oh, it's really simple. It's just a drop-in class every Wednesday from 6:30 until 8 p.m.
So you just show up at the Rocked Up 6:30 to 8.
Yep.
But then there's this lady that called you up and you had a few conversations before she came in because she needed to get some answers and like that. How does that come about?
Well, I can't quite remember if she called the Rock Dump or if she went on our Facebook page, because I have a Facebook page where we can post pictures of what we've been doing and people can share them.
How do we find you on Facebook?
So you could search Women's Rock Climbing Class at the Rock Dump.
Okay.
And
that'll get you to you.
That will.
Okay, and that'll start the contact process. So if you've got questions or something like that, and you don't want to just show up and be intimidated out of this deal, have a chance to talk this over with the master or mistress of the art here. So I guess another question is, so I'm not likely to show up at your women's workshop.
Okay.
So what if I decide I'm going to remain a guy? How do I get into this?
Well, you could.
Are there classes like yours for me?
There aren't any men's classes right now. We find that women really like the social aspect, and men aren't drawn to that quite in the same way. And so you could certainly bring a friend, bring a family member, and come down and just try it out.
Okay.
We have a great staff down at the Rock Dump. I'm not actually the staff. I just volunteered to do this class because I love it so much. But we do have a great staff down at the Rock Dump, and I promise you they'll take care of you and show you what you need to know and give you some sort of beginner ideas of where to start.
I guess the other question is back to women in the class. What if you're responsible for childcare? Do you have any kind of arrangement for someone who has to bring their son or daughter?
I don't, and it is from 6:30 until 8,
yeah,
so hopefully there's someone else that can sort of step in for an hour and a half.
But did you say something about a toddler class?
There is a toddler class, and it's totally unrelated, but I can definitely talk about it. We have toddler time where families can come in and bring their tots during the week on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., and it's totally free. So kids can just run around. I don't know if you've been out there lately, but there's this really soft, cushy red surface. It's not quite a carpet. It's like a foam on the ground, and so kids just love running around on it and tumbling and just sort of having fun. And so they can experiment with the rock climbing. They can do that.
Outstanding. And toddlers' class is when?
The toddlers class is Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday from 10 to 1.
Okay, and this women's workshop, one more time, is?
It's from 6:30 to 8 on every Wednesday.
Outstanding. Thank you so much, Jess Brown, for telling us about all of the stuff at the Rock Dump. Music by Carlos Nakai coming up next weekend. It's about a minute and a half before 4 o'clock. We're KTOO Juno. We broadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269 AO in the Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K210 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is also on GCI Cable on digital channel 871, and we're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and thank you very much from listeners like you. Monday at 3, KTO-FM, we'll have Juno Afternoon. Joan Pardis is the host, and she'll be talking about Saturday's fundraiser for the Cancer Connection. Elise Tomlinson will drop in to talk about her First Friday exhibit at the Canvas. Writer photographer John Waterman will be here about his upcoming presentation at the Downtown Library on wilderness areas. And we'll talk with Maria Levischuk, the chair of the conference committee, about next week's conference on housing and homelessness in Anchorage. To be held in Anchorage, of course. Stay with us now for All Things Considered, coming up at 4 o'clock.